Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 15 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists this week include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor from Hinsdale, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. While you're there, check out our Farm Assets Conference. You'll find all the details about the Tuesday before Thanksgiving event to take place in Normal, Illinois. Just $30. FarmAssetsConference.com or willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Mr. Zuzulo, I think I'll start with you. Mike, what's on your list of things we should discuss for the day?
Well, since we have the master of South America with us, why don't we talk about the bean fundamentals down there and then maybe the segue that into the corn fundamentals up here.
Okay. Merrill Crowley?
Let's take a look at what we can expect for prices to do next year.
And Matt Bennett?
I think all those things sound good. I'd like to know what he thinks that we're going to be looking at as far as acreage and production goes in South America.
And Dr. Michael Cordonier.
Well, we'll talk about the acreage and the production estimates, then also ask about the correlation of El Nino and weather patterns in Brazil and Argentina.
Okay, good enough. Those who are interested in the weather patterns in Argentina and Brazil on Thursday afternoon during the closing market report, and you can go back and listen to this or just look for the weather segment at willag.org that belongs to the closing market report. Mike Tenora talks about it a great deal in depth. We'll discuss that again today. Let's start with you, Dr. Cordonier. Acreage and production estimates for South America, they have been really big, especially for Brazil to this point. What are your thoughts?
Yes, CONAB came out last week with their first estimate of the season, and they put the production at 100 to 102 million tons. Now, I have the area up about 4.3% to 33.3 million hectares, and I have a production of 100 million tons. So if the weather cooperates, there's going to be another record crop out of Brazil. And what the farmers are doing, they're switching full-season corn over to soybeans because they can make more money on soybeans, and then they're shifting the corn to that second crop of corn planted after the soybeans. So that's where most of the new acreage is coming from, but it's also coming from the conversion of degraded pastures to soybeans and clearing some new land in northeastern Brazil. So it's going to be a big crop if the weather cooperates.
Did we learn anything from the weather pattern last year, which was very similar? They started out very dry, that we might be able to put into the back of our minds as we begin this season in South America? And what?
Yeah, right now about 8% of Brazil's soybeans are planted. Last year it was 7%, average is 9%. So we're about on par with last year. And then when the weather turned more favorable in late October, early November, they did plant very fast, and of course we ended up with a record soybean crop. So any delay now for planting in Brazil really doesn't have much impact on the soybean yield if the weather cooperates later on. A bigger impact would be if it gets too delayed, then you don't have time to do all the second crop of corn that you may want to do in Mato Grosso and Paraná. So it actually has more of an impact on the corn, potentially, than on the soybeans.
Is there a point at which, if we're too delayed, that they actually plant corn instead of soybeans?
No, I don't see that at all, because it's very forgiving for soybeans. You can plant soybeans all the way up until late November, early December, and still do fine. I don't think anyone would forego their soybean crop to do corn. Not that I know of.
Okay, so I remember last year talking, Dr. Cordonier, a lot about the delayed planting and the possibility that it would have an impact on the second crop, corn. How much of a delay do you suppose needs to take place before really we would have to be concerned about such a thing happening.
Okay, what happened last year was very unique. When the farmers were getting ready to plant the second crop of corn, and it was delayed, the real started to devalue, and prices started to increase very quickly in Brazil. So Brazilian farmers had a much better corn price to look at when they were deciding to plant or not. A second thing that happened was the rainy season continued to go very good. So when it was normally getting, should normally be getting drier, it wasn't. So they had good soil moisture and they had a rising corn price, and they ended up planting more corn than the year before. And the corn yields last year were record high. So we had a record large corn production from that second crop of corn in Brazil.
And finally, before we move on to the others, can you take me through Argentina and the potential there?
Yeah, Argentina right now is about 27% planted on their corn and maybe 1 or 2% on their soybeans. Now, the corn acreage in Argentina is going to go down. It's just a matter of how much. I have it down about 12 to 15%. The grain exchange of Buenos Aires has it down 20%. The farmers just don't like corn because of the cost of production and the fact that soybeans are more profitable right now. So we'll see if they do, how much they cut back on the corn. There's going to be a big thing in Argentina. On the 25th of October, they have new presidential elections. And the opposition candidate had said if he wins, he's going to remove all those export taxes on commodities and stop interfering in the export market. That would be a game changer in Argentina. Now, if the current government wins, they said they would look at these export taxes but makes no commitment what they would do. So right now it's kind of too close to call. It probably will go to a runoff election because there's several opposition candidates and one government candidate. So that could be a real big deal in Argentina here in a week and a half.
Game changer in terms that they could flood the export market?
Well, if they take off those export taxes, the farmers would like to plant more corn because right now there's like six times more acres of soybeans than corn. And the farmers all know that's a very bad agricultural practice. They want to rotate more, but the government is forcing them to have a monocrop of soybeans. So if they take off that export tax, I think instantly the farmers will go out to and there and plant some more corn.
Ah, and there lies a key. And what's the date on that again for the election?
October 25th, a week from Sunday.
All right, we will be keeping track of that. Matt Bennett, I'd like to turn to you, talk about acreage in the United States. Last week, of course, we've got some numbers. Is the acreage number from USDA right for soybeans yet?
You know, I think it's a lot closer than what it's been. If there was going to be a big adjustment, I mean, I was kind of surprised that they brought down corn acres the way that to that tune. I thought there might be a small adjustment as far as soybeans go. I do think that they're probably getting pretty close where they're at right now. I think moving forward, probably the biggest change, you know, in production might be, you know, some guys are saying maybe some of the late beans aren't really quite as good as what the earlier beans were, but still, the earlier beans were so good that I think that that 47.2 might end up actually coming to pass.
How do you view basis levels and deal with soybeans only at this moment?
Well, I think, you know, whenever you look at soybean basis levels, it's been pretty interesting to see just how strong they've been in places, especially, you know, like right around here in the last week or two, you know, guys are really bidding up trying to get a hold of some of the last bushels. And so, you know, I do think the bean crop is really good in a lot of places, but yet basis levels are still very strong. So, you know, you look at what crush was today at 126, and yeah, it was towards the lower end of the range, but still it was the biggest we've seen in September for several years. And so, you know, and then margins were good. And so I think that there's still a lot of people, whenever you've got crush margins good, they're going to be out if they're trying to source soybeans.
Mike Zuzulo, on the global front, where do you put soybeans from the United States and their ability to compete?
If prices are pretty equal to Paranagua right now, Todd, and I think the weaker currency exchange rate for the dollar has helped quite a bit here the last couple, 3 weeks. I think what I heard Dr. Cordonnier talk about is the idea that I continue to feel like that the medium-term fundamentals are much more supportive and there's much less risk premium in the corn than there is the soybeans. I see that from a feed perspective. The U.S. red meat production this year is going to be about a seven-year high, about 6% more than where we were last year. Yet USDA is giving a feed and residual number of down 1%. I know they use feed and residual as a catch-all, but I think that number could come up quite a bit. I find it especially interesting that last year at this time, in the October USDA report for 2014-15 carryover, we were just under 2.1 billion bushels in carryover. We have since shrunk that 17% as of the September 30th grain stocks report. And, you know, from a statistician's standpoint, that's just unacceptable. We need to be better at that if we're doing government data work. And you know what the most important thing to me is that lead month corn back then when we were at 2.1 billion was 375, essentially exactly where we're at right now with the carryover that is 1.6. And I think a carryover that between the demand that we could see from feed, the less export demand competition, and also the sheer fact that we haven't priced any kind of El Nino premium into the corn market, I think we could go below 1.5 in a carryover for corn when it's all said and done. So medium term wise, I really do think the corn has a better value level to it than the beans right now.
Explain that comment. It has a better value, meaning that
less risk premium. And that goes back to your global question. I mean, we're talking about a supply right now. Major competitors' corn stocks right now in 2015-2016 are 18% less than they were in 13-14 and 15% less than last year as far as their ending stocks of the major competitors. And so if we would see corn demand come around in the export market and the trade would stop worrying about the export demand side for corn and U.S. exports would start to pick up, I think there's a good reason that it would continue. We would build a trend of increasing exports because we have less competition. Trade's not looking at that right now, and they're in fact looking at the exact opposite. They're worried about what China's going to do with Milo and imports and what they're going to do with DDG imports, and I just heard that this week.
All right, so I want to make sure that I have this right because I have a feeling, Mike and Matt and Merrill, that farmers feel like after they've got into the field that there is more potential for their corn price to rally than there is for their soybean price. And what you're telling me is that there's risk premium already built into the soybean market, or some, I think, Mike Zuzulo, but that there is no need for risk premium to be built into the corn market. Now, you could read that, I suppose, as we could potentially build some in, or you could simply read that as, hey, we've got plenty of corn supply around, and we've got this thing priced right at the moment.
The trade sees as no need to build corn premium, Todd. I feel like the corn is very discounted right now, and it's the best storable commodity, to boil it right down to it.
Best storable commodity. You think that's correct too, Merrill Crowley?
Well, when you look at what the market's telling you, you're seeing the carry out to July at 22 cents. You're seeing chance picking up basis. So the market is telling you that it's better to store the corn and sell the beans because there's virtually no carry in the beans, I think 3 to 5 cents from month to month at the best. So, I think the market's telling us that we should store the corn and sell the beans.
And it's doing that because there's just a big crop and it doesn't want it, or there's potential for risk left in the marketplace?
Well, we don't see any perceived risk in the corn market at this point because the exports currently are lagging behind last year, and yet we're having good export demand currently for the soybeans. Usually both are front-loaded in every year, and because of some of the corn that we had, the extra corn coming out of South America, I think that's kind of put a little bit of a damper on our export market, along with the fact that the dollar is higher, making other sources cheaper.
Dr. Cordonier, have you taken a look again, and I'm sure you have, at the acreage figures from USDA, and are you satisfied with them for the United States?
Well, I think both acreage numbers will come down a little bit more in the November report. So I was pretty satisfied with the corn number. I thought the beans came in, it was a little bit more than I expected, but I do think it might go down a little bit more. And for the yields, I don't see much of a change at all in November. I think we're pretty close on the yields. But the total production could come down a little bit more with a decrease in the acreage.
So kind of the bottom line, at least to this point, and it's a little disconcerting when everybody says kind of the same thing, and I don't know whether you will all agree on this or not, has been to sell short-term rallies, both corn and soybeans. Is everybody in that same category? Matt Bennett, I'll start with you.
Well, I think our approach has been here recently that it was a pretty good idea to go ahead and sell soybeans on rallies. And then if a guy wants to do something from the long side, he can always buy a cheap call. But, you know, I didn't see a real necessity for that. But by all means, it can be done. And then as far as corn goes, I would agree with Mike. It's definitely the one that I would want to store more so than beans. But if we do get a good rally, I wouldn't have a problem with going ahead and moving some corn. The thing is that a lot of guys in our neighborhood are already done. So if it's already in storage, I'm going to need a pretty decent rally to go ahead and decide to go ahead and sell that, you know. And I'm probably not going to be pulling corn out of the bins quite yet anyway.
For soybeans, the same thing. So was this week's rally not enough for you?
Not for the corn market necessarily, but for beans, I certainly have been selling. Yes, it's enough for me.
Okay, Mike Zuzulo, enough for you?
935 is an area that I'd like to get to in January beans and make some fast sales. I think this is where it goes back to that storable commodity comment, Todd. I think that if you're going to be long in the market on soybeans, I think the futures market is better than the bin. And I do say that in part because of your question about the basis. I am skeptical that the basis is going to hold up. I think the crush report on Thursday for the month of September kind of shows me that the demand is starting to get a little bit sloppy for domestic soybeans. We came in at 126.7. That was on the low end of the trade guess. And that compared with 135 million bushels in August. I think this is where, if you're going to be long in the soybeans, I think the paper side would be better because I think you'd have more upside from a standpoint of the funds investing and getting behind it, and you'd have less risk that basis would be widened or reduced or taken away from you if the futures market rallied. I'm sincere in saying I think that the corn is very undervalued, and I would like producers that I work with to store absolutely as much corn on the farm as they can, even if it's at the expense of soybeans.
Okay. Merrill, I want to pick up with you there, and I might come back to Mike Zuzulo on this one. Farmers have built a lot of storage, something like 500 million, I think. It's a big number, which means they can act, I think, individually or maybe in unison, because sometimes that happens in just the way the herd moves, much more like an elevator system. What does that tell you about how the system's working differently in this year, maybe last year, than it did historically?
Well, I think with the farmers pulling more grain off onto the farm, they're holding it tighter. But I also think that you're going to start working into a situation where we're starting to hear more and more stories how the farmer's being pinched economically. And we keep hearing the story, well, they have plenty of money. Well, it's not true with all of them. There's several of them starting to get into the pinch, and I'm not sure that they're going to be able to continue to hold as well as they have in the past. The bankers are going to have to make some tough decisions this year. So does the storage help keep it off the market? Certainly does. I mean, you don't have the costs that you are involved in commercial storage. There's still costs, but the farmer's more comfortable with tucking it away in his bin. So from the standpoint of more farmer storage, yeah, I think it tends to keep more off the market. And then when the neighbor sees the guy going and he knows he needs money or the banker needs money, they're going to take some into the market. That's not the way it should be looked at. It should be looked at as far as, when is my basis going to improve? At what level do I want to push it when it does improve to a certain level? Or, in other words, you should look at the carry, the basis, just like an elevator does, to pay for the storage you have on your farm.
Okay, Matt, I have the number, and it's a combination, actually. USDA, this is from Daryl Good's Weekly Outlook on Monday of this week. The USDA's December grain stocks report, for example, estimates the permanent storage capacity on and on off-farm combined increased nearly 550 million bushels from December 1st of 2012 to December 1st of 2014. So what difference does that make? And then maybe you can talk about the lack of transportation delays this year as we've been moving this crop into storage.
The thing about storage is that we're in a situation where, you know, I agree with what Merrill said, that guys have been very tight-fisted
and it's definitely played into the market. But I don't think that that's going to be something the guys are going to be able to do near as easily moving forward. You know, as far as transportation goes, you know, it's been pretty interesting to me to see some of the areas with guys that I deal with, you know, where the corn crop hasn't quite been so good. And, you know, I think that basis is definitely going to be able to improve in certain areas. Like, for instance, you know, whenever you get in your neighborhood, Todd, and you go east, I mean, obviously we've all known that we had some significant issues in that part of the world this year. I think that it basis can actually will kind of rub off on other places, pull bushels into areas that don't necessarily have them this year. And I think that overall it's going to increase basis levels.
East side and west side, how much of an impact does a deficit area, when it's a large deficit area like it would be this year, stretching from Watseka all the way to the Ohio border, have on basis levels? How far back to the west will that impact the marketplace?
Well, I think that we have to just stop and look at, you know, I mean, you're very accurate in what you're talking, the area that you're talking about. And so Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, all three have had some issues. And so you gotta wonder how far you can pull bushels. And I think that there will be parts of Illinois that will be able to take care of some of that. Actually, you know, when you go from Shelby up towards Macon County, there was a lot of guys with pretty darn good corn. But I think that it will stretch all the way to western Illinois, and I think the basis levels could be propped as much as 20 cents because it's, you know, definitely going to take a fair amount of basis to pry corn from different parts of the world. You're going to have to be able to get transportation paid for. So I think that, you know, there's going to be parts of the eastern corn belt that will see basis levels 15 to 20 higher than what many people were expecting earlier on.
Mike Zuzulo, does it make very much of a difference that the area that was most widely affected, and I'll put Missouri into this crew too, so Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, happened to be along the river system and would normally feed into the export market?
Yeah, I mean, this is where the weaker corn exports, if the corn exports were stronger, I think you'd be seeing a much different reaction in the cash market right now, and also in the futures market as a result of that, Todd. I think it's very fortunate that the export market has been slow. What we're really talking about right now is feeding the ethanol plants and the livestock users in that central corn and eastern corn and bean belt. I think when I look at the September stocks report and I see that the commercial corn stocks are at 66% of the total, and normally it's 61, 62, or maybe as high as 63%, it says the commercials have had the vast majority of the corn compared to the farmer, and so the farmer is coming in with less concern about bin space than he had last year. And I've got to say, once again, why wouldn't you store corn if last year at this time we were talking about a 2.1 billion bushel carryover in the USDA report, and it's shrunk to 1.7, and you know you're down about 20%. And right now, and that's the 14-15 crop, and right now, as it stands at just under 1.6 on a carryover, we're down almost 25% where we were last year, and the lead month corn futures is the exact same price. Wheat is no longer a feed competitor, and soybeans carryover is almost the same as it was last year as well. So why wouldn't you want to store corn at this point? What do you have to lose?
Right, but on the flip side, if you're going to make that argument for corn, shouldn't you make that same argument for soybeans? Because we went from this size of a carryover last year for soybeans to, what, 191?
I think that's a great point. The thing we don't have that we had last year at this time is a very tight South American supply, and this is where planting delays come into play. I think that the rally that we've seen up until this week in soybeans and the fact that we've held 850 has been because the trade is concerned that we do not have as big a carryover here in this country. And they have seen, like Merrill said, a very strong demand pace. But we have much more stocks in South America than we had last year at this time, and much, much more than we had in 13-14 as far as ending stocks. So I see it as you get to a certain point, all of a sudden the demand side shifts back to the South American source instead of the United States source. I don't see that in corn at this point.
Yeah, so Merrill, I'll come back to you on soybeans because we have had good demand this week. Will China be able to be into the marketplace enough to continue to support the bean price in the U.S.?
Well, that's a good question. That, you know, it's tough for anybody to really know. You know, they, it was about a month ago, they signed a huge letter of intent. And I think some of the pricing and some of the reason for the market to rally just the other day was due to the fact that they finally priced some of that, and it looked like a fair amount. And as soon as the market rallied, they backed off of their pricing. That leads me to believe, for one, that the push we had in soybeans could very well be a false breakout. Now, nothing's been decided as far as price levels. We need to get below $9, $8.90 before you can be assured it was a false breakout, and really need to get prices above $9.26, $9.30 before you can see the prices maybe going higher. One of the other things I think that's going to hurt us, we are in the tail end of these price of harvest, so pressure is starting to wind down from having enough room in the West for the soybeans. And what I'm getting to there is, with that pressure being relieved, it allows the soybeans to rally a little bit more because they're not looking to be sold in order to provide room. Okay, so with the corn market yet, you still have about half the crop done. There's still a lot of corn that's going to have to move out west somewhere or across the scales to be sold, and still provides plenty of pressure in that corn market. So we need China to come in and buy. I think they will. I think there's enough need still in that country, even if they have money problems. It's just that I think the money problems they have and the different money problems they have in the world economy tends to delay or keep them at bay, because they know there's a large amount of crop available, so they don't have to run to price early like they had to in, say, 2012.
Dr. Cordonnier, do you have any expertise on the Chinese market for soybeans?
Well, the problem is that they're not very transparent at all, although you keep noticing that they badmouthed the market, say we're not going to import as many soybeans, and at the end of the month, they end up with a record large importation. So I do feel that their imports will continue to expand, irregardless of a little slowdown in their economy, and I think it's going to continue that way going forwards. I know in Brazil, you know, most of their beans go to China, and the Chinese are actually very active in Brazil in the possibility of building railroads and that sort of thing to make sure they can get the continued supply of soybeans at a cheaper rate, you know, going forwards with better logistics.
All right. Time to wrap things up. I think, Matt Bennett, I'll start with you. Any final word for the day?
Yeah, I think as we wrap up harvest in our area, and as we move farther west and north, wrapping up harvest, I'm still definitely a store of corn, and I, especially on soybeans, I want guys to remember that, you know, a lot of guys in our area had 10, 15 bushel better beans than what they thought they were going to have. And at the price, with the price rallying in soybeans, they're actually much more profitable than what they originally thought they were going to be. And that's a big reason why I want to be moving out of beans. If you want to stay long, go ahead and buy a cheap call. But, you know, I want to go ahead and take a good thing and do something with it.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Merrill Crowley is with Crowley Commodities. He's in Watsika. Merrill?
This is in a time period where prices are tight, and pushing the pencil can be the difference between success and failure. I think that if you have farm storage, you can utilize it for the carry and the basis improvement. And once you get that, you price it. Then you look at maybe owning it back on the board or owning with calls. If you're going to take the grain into the elevator, now, May calls right now, 21 cents, 22 cents for a 980 calls. That's pretty much cheaper than what your storage is going to be. You go out to July, you're looking at July calls at 410 July calls at 23.5. You know, transfer your risk to the board.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
You know, Todd, the big thing with the dollar lately has been its fall, and that surprised many in the market. I think the one thing we want to keep an eye on is the December rate policy decision by the Federal Reserve, because right now the trade is taking the dollar down, in my view, because they don't see much inflation here in the United States, and they don't see much inflation in China. And as a result of that, they don't feel like that the need for a policy change is as great, and the Fed's not going to move as fast. So we've got a window here, I think, between now and December where the dollar works in favor of the commodity sector, and that's what I'll be watching.
And finally, thank you so much, Dr. Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Your final word for the day.
Well, the planting progress has been kind of sporadic in Brazil. They had basically a dry October, and that would have probably more impact on the future corn production in Brazil than it does the soybeans. So it needs to be watched very carefully, and we have this El Nino. And El Nino can be kind of unpredictable, especially in South America, so we have to watch it very carefully going forwards.
Our panelists this week have included Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find also a link to our Farm Assets Conference. It's coming up Tuesday, November the 24th in Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.